I am 275 pounds, and that is successful for me. It didn't used to be successful. 315 pounds was my successful weight when I was playing football at Oregon State, and now that I'm not doing that and I'm in normal life weight for me is successful at 275 pounds. In order to get there, I've been doing a whole fitness journey, lots of different stuff. I've cleaned up my eating. I've done routine exercise, been through a couple of different fitness programs. If you follow me on social media, I post about that frequently. You guys are kind of, or the people who watch me at least, are my accountability to maintaining that. But success can vary for many different people on many different levels in regards to what they're trying to accomplish. Now, the BMI would say that me, 6'3", 275 pounds, is morbidly obese. And on that scale, I am not successful in normal life at 275 pounds. But in regards to playing basketball on Saturday morning and being able to run and get through exercises, I am successful. And we actually play basketball on Saturday mornings frequently. I've actually played in a couple different groups. And even within that, there's people who play that have difference of opinion on what success is playing Saturday morning basketball. Some success is getting out of bed at 6 a.m., making it to the gym, and playing with all of their friends. And for others, there's only one success that morning, and that is if you are going to win. And winning is the only thing. And I bet you guys know these people and have seen these people. If you work out at a gym or if you've played Saturday morning basketball, you know that there are people that take what they do very seriously, and there's only one outcome, and they're going to bulldoze anybody who's in their way to accomplish that. And there's different varying successes, but everybody has an opinion on what success looks like. And so I was asking myself the question, what makes a person successful? Like, what does the world categorize or define success as? And so, like any good millennial, I Googled it. So I want to read what Google told me about what success means. There were a couple different places that I looked. There was an article, a blog post written on Forbes. There was one from The Muse. There was just somebody on Medium who had a couple random thoughts on what he thought success looked like. But I want to read you guys and see if you guys can relate to some of these standards. You're successful if you call the shots. That makes sense. If you become to the level of a boss or oversee people, you are successful. If you help others become successful, when you stand up for yourself and have a backbone, that's when you've become successful. If you're happy, that's when you're successful. If you can pay your bills, that's a good one. If you have goals that you're working towards, with my working out, I've set goals that I have. I actually have a goal that I want to have a six-pack by the end of 2018. I'm also socially accountable to that. I've been posting pictures, so if you guys want to see how I'm doing on that journey, that might be worth checking out. It's not there yet, so it might not be yet worth checking out. You're told you're an inspiration. If you inspire people, that's when you become successful. You have critics or haters. You become successful when people start to hate you or criticize the things that you're doing. You are tech savvy. I like that one. Some of you guys, if you've made it to the level of being savvy with your phones or computers, you have become successful in this day and age. People come to you for advice. You start working with big names. Big companies find you and ask you to promote them. You're not in debt. You show others respect. When you look good and are hygienic, you showered that day. I can tell you, you laugh. But for those of you in the room who work from home, this is a big one. You are successful when you've made it into the shower that day, gotten out of your pajamas, and you don't go into your home office looking unkempt. When you make enough in order to give back to people, you become successful. And when you've had a long-term relationship and you become married and have kids and start leaving a legacy. All of those things are how Google defined success in our world. And for you guys at work, and at home and in school and with your friends and your family and kids, you probably have goals and ideas on what you see as success and things you've set up for yourself so you guys know whether or not you're hitting the mark. And where you've come up with those things, I don't know. But I realized for me, it's something that I hadn't really thought of, but there were certain things that I was measuring myself on whether or not I was being successful. And so today we're going to look at Psalms 37, and it'll be up here on the screen, or if you have your phone, we have an app, the Bible app, and we have a spot in there where you can find Psalms 37. But we're going to look at how God defines success. Because as we go through life, we have our standards of success, and we have things that we see as what we want to accomplish or what we want to do. But that can get very jumbled, and depending on the year or depending on the time that we live in, those guidelines and measuring sticks for what is actually successful change. And so what's great about Psalm 37 is that it's going to kind of show us what God's standards are, and they are not changing. They kind of stay the same all throughout time, and it gives us a sense of freedom. And so there, as we go through this, there's going to be kind of four sections that I've divided Psalm 37 into. And these four sections kind of answer four different questions, or address four different questions that we kind of ask when we are talking about whether or not we're successful. So let's dive into Psalm 37. Hopefully you guys have that open in front of you, or like I said, it'll be on the screen. If not, we're going to start looking at verses 1 through 9. And before we dive into this particular psalm, we're in a series right now where we're going through the book of Psalms, and our series is titled Honest to God. And we're looking at Psalms because Psalms is a book in the Bible that is helpful to us. It's a compilation of songs and prayers, all of which help us interact with God in an honest way. Most of them are written by King David, which is what Psalm 37 is written by. Some of them are written or composed, sung by other people. But all of them help us interact with being honest with God. And so in this psalm particularly, this is a little bit different than just a prayer or a song. This one is what they call a wisdom psalm. And so sometimes there'll be psalms that are specifically for declaring God's greatness or his wisdom or his knowledge. And it's not so much something that we're saying, but it's more of a declaration. This is what God tells us, and this is how God answers questions for us. And so today it's a little bit different. Everything that we read in here today is going to be declarative. It's not going to be like spoken from the heart. It's going to be, these are truths that David, who's a king, is saying. And so what's great about this psalm also is that King David is speaking it, and King David has everything that you could possibly need. King David is like the definition of successful. He has all of the money, he has all of the wives, he has all of the land, the kingdom, everything. And he's speaking these truths about what success is, how God defines success. So I want to look at verse 1 through 9 as we're going through life trying to determine what success is. This is how God starts talking about success. Do not fret because of those who are evil. Now, throughout this, he's going to talk about, he's going to refer to things that are evil and things that are wicked. Sometimes, like this, it says, you who are evil, kind of talking about a specific person. But I want to look at this psalm more from like a pulled back macro level in talking about wickedness and evil in regards to like worldly systems. Not necessarily, there's definitely times where there's a specific person or specific things that are doing evil in this world. But as we read this today, I want to think about it more in regards to a set of standards, in this case success, a set of standards that are upon us, some that are wicked and some that are from God. So when he's addressing people who might be wicked, think of kind of worldly systems, think about some of those successes that I listed off. So this is verse 1. Do not fret because of those who are evil, or be envious of those who do wrong. For like the grass, they will soon wither. Like green plants, they will soon die away. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and enjoy safe pastures. Take delight in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust in him. And he will do this. He will make your righteous reward shine like the dawn, your vindication like the noonday sun. Be still before the Lord. Wait patiently for him. Do not fret. When people succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes, refrain from anger. Turn from wrath. Do not fret. It leads only to evil. For those who are evil will be destroyed, but those who hope in the Lord will inherit the land. I wanted to address this first kind of question. Success asks us, where do we stand? Or maybe that's why we look to see if we're successful or not. So we want to know, where do we stand? How do we stand against our coworkers, our friends, our family? Where do we line up? And so we ask ourselves all of these questions, and we look and read those articles on Google and find out, am I successful or not? Because we want to know, where do we stack up in this order of success in the world? And the very first statement, if you can go back to the first slide, verse 1, the very first statement, do not fret. Do not worry yourself with where you stand or stack up or measure up. I love that. There are so many, the list of articles that I could choose from to see on Google, what is successful and what is not successful, was countless and was endless. Everybody's asking this question, and God's standard, the first thing he says is, do not fret. And so when we're asking ourselves the question, where do I stand? God responds to us, it doesn't matter. Don't worry about it. My standards of success are that I will provide for you. He says, commit your way to the Lord, trust in him, and he will do this. He will make your righteous reward shine like the dawn, the vindication like the noonday sun. Be still before the Lord. What God responds to us is that it doesn't matter what we have or what we don't have. It doesn't matter our measuring sticks that we put on ourselves. You are successful because of God, and you don't need to fret. I want to keep going into the second question that we kind of need to address when we're thinking about success. This comes verse 21, and then verse 25 and 26 will be on the screen. The wicked borrow and do not repay, but the righteous give generously. I was young, and now I'm old, yet I have never seen the righteous forsaken or their children begging bread. They are always generous and lend freely. Their children will be a blessing. I think the second question when we're talking about success is, do I have enough? Like, can I be generous to give? Because we would all agree that successful people have enough to give. But we see here in two verses that kind of seem unrelated, but they're together. Verse 21, the wicked borrow and do not repay. The ways of the world borrow. We get to the top by borrowing and by having and by hoarding. But the righteous give generously. You notice that there's no standard for when you give. There's no point for when you give. There's no like pinnacle that you reach or moment that you have. There's no amount of stuff that you have and then you're able to start giving. But success for us and the standard that God gives is that you can give all the time. Like, as Christians, we are generous people. As followers of Jesus, we are generous people. When the Spirit resides inside us, what we do and how we're seen by people is that we give. Verses 25 and 26 address it in a different way. I was young and now I'm old. So David, as he's talking about this and proclaiming this, he's seen a lot of life. He's lived a lot of life. And so he kind of knows how this world works. Obviously, he himself is successful. I was young and now I'm old, yet I have never seen the righteous forsaken or their children begging bread. So not only do we have a generous nature and all the time are we giving, we also are never in need when we're constantly giving. We posture ourselves towards society of giving, and yet we don't ever need, and we're not in need when we posture ourselves that way. He continues, they're always generous. and lend freely. Their children will be a blessing. So 25 and 26 also state there's no age requirement for when you start giving. Like when you start becoming, having that generous posture towards society, towards the people around us. So when people are looking at us from the youngest person in the room to the oldest person in the room, generosity is what defines success for us. And as we give in that way, we don't have to worry about being in need. So when we're asking the question to figure out if we're successful or not, do I have enough? Not only is the answer yes, but you have enough to give and keep giving. I want to keep going. There are four questions that I want to address total. This is number three. And we're going to read verses 30 through 33. They'll also be up on the screen. The mouths of the righteous utter wisdom, and their tongues speak what is just. The law of their God is their hearts. Their feet do not slip. The wicked lie in wait for the righteous, intent on putting them to death. But the Lord will not leave them in the power of the wicked, or let them be condemned when brought to trial. This verse is a little bit, or this set of verses here is a little bit more subtle, but there's actually a focus shift that we have when we're following Jesus and when we're successful. When I Googled what it means to be successful, all the articles were written such that you're looking to your left and you're looking to your right. How am I doing versus this lane of runners, and how am I doing versus this lane of runners in my family? Am I stacking up correctly? Am I stacking up against my friends, my coworkers? Where am I at? Where's my business at? But these set of verses show us that where we actually need to be looking is up. And not just like, not just the cliche of like, well, God's up there, but there's an actual different set of standards that we as Christians follow for what success is. So everybody is here playing this game, and God wants us to be playing a game up here. Like, it's not even in the same arena. It's not even in the same ballpark. The mouths of the righteous utter wisdom. So we are to speak wisdom, and their tongues speak what is just. The law of their God is in their hearts. Their feet do not slip. So we're focused up here, and we're not concerned with what's going on here. And the tendency would be, well, how do I know that I'm doing okay? Am I going to slip? Am I going to fall? Am I going in the right direction? And we're told, their feet do not slip. God is in their hearts. The wicked lie in wait for the righteous, intent on putting them to death. Everybody down here is competing against each other. They're looking to set, you guys have played Mario Kart, haven't you? They're looking to, like, shoot shells and, like, throw bananas and stuff, and like, they're playing right here, and we're not playing that game. Like that, like that's not, we're not, like, we will not slip. We will not go over the bananas. Their feet do not slip. Yet the wicked lie in wait. They're playing here. They're trying to climb to the top by making sure they cross the finish line first. But the Lord will not leave them in the power of the wicked, or let them be condemned when they are brought to the trial. We have a tendency to want to play this game right here against all of the people who are around us, all the people who we see. Yet God calls us to have a focus shift on Him, and we will be successful when we focus on Him. And we will be successful not because we know what's happening down here, but because we know and trust in the promise that God says, I will not let you slip. I will not let you be condemned when we're brought to the trial. And the wicked that are moving around us and the schemes that are happening out here will not affect us negatively. So the question is, what are they doing? We ask the question, what are they doing? What are they doing over there? What are they doing over there? And God says, it doesn't matter. I don't care what they're doing over there. I care what you're doing and where your focus is. This is the last question that I want to address today. And we're going to read this in verses 35 through 38. And I think this one, I'm about to become a dad for the second time. Thank you. Yeah, my wife's doing all the work. We're going to have a boy. And I think this one resonates with parents specifically. But I think it resonates with all of us in different ways, whether, because when I was younger, I thought about this stuff too. just in different ways, but I think the magnitude of it is big for parents. But it's kind of that concept of legacy. And so that's what verses 35 through 38 address. I have seen a wicked and ruthless man flourishing like a luxuriant native tree. But he soon passed away and was no more. Though I looked for him, he could not be found. Consider the blameless, observe the upright. A future awaits those who seek peace. But all sinners will be destroyed. There will be no future for the wicked. These verses address the concept of legacy. And I think at the end of the day, when we ask ourselves, were we successful, is did we do enough? Like coming to the end of our life or coming to the end of a career or a season of life, did I do enough? Did I pour enough into my kids? Did I do enough in my job or in my sport or in my school to get where I'm looking to go? Am I going to leave a legacy? And this is important because how the world would talk about us leaving a legacy is much different than how God talks about us leaving a legacy. The first part depicts the world, a wicked and ruthless man, somebody who's successful in the world, flourishing like a luxuriant native tree. As we look at them, we know these people, we see them. They must be successful. They have a lot of money. They're ahead of me in this race that we're playing down here. But he soon passed away and was no more. I looked for him and he could not be found. So after a period of time, this person was no longer in existence, or this thought or this premise moving into the future was no longer there. Consider the blameless, what we're called to be. Observe the upright. A future awaits those who seek peace. So we're called to be blameless and seek peace. But all sinners will be destroyed. The ways of the world, the successes, how the game, the rules that the game down here is played by, will all be destroyed, and there will be no future for the wicked. All of us, whether your parents or whether your kid's graduating, you've just graduated high school, or you're thinking about what am I going to do with my life and how are people going to be remembering me by leaving that legacy piece, this tells us how we need to do that. We need to consider the blameless. We need to be blameless before God. We need to seek peace. And we'll answer the question, did we do enough? Because the answer when we're playing this game up here and following God is yes. You have a future. You will leave a future for your kids. You will leave a future for those behind you, for those who look to you by your relationship with God. And were you blameless? Were you seeking peace? And were you investing in the relationship with him? And that is what bears the fruit that lasts forever and ever, not the things that I found on Google. Not that those things don't help us understand better how this game is played down here, but those are the things that are not going to benefit your kids, and they're not going to benefit how you pass on to the next generation so that their kids' 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 will understand what it means to be successful and live for God. So through all of this, being successful, God defines success differently than how the world defines success. And how do I or how do we remember that or think about that more frequently? And so there's a couple action steps, both of which are in the bulletin. And I want you guys to kind of look at those and do those this week. And not for me, not for anything that we have going on here at the Grove, but because I really believe that all of us in here in some way are looking to be successful. I would imagine that's why you woke up this morning, put on a shirt. You all have haircuts and you're all doing stuff. So I don't think any of us don't want to be successful. But I think if we get stuck playing this game down here, there's a lot of stress and anxiety and kind of spinning your wheels and frustration. And so I want you to kind of try these action steps this week so that you don't have to exist there anymore and you can experience peace and fruitfulness and blessing beyond what you can imagine. And so the two things that I want you to practice this week or try, Megan and I have actually started, Megan's my wife, we've started, because In the video, they were talking about envy and jealousy, and that is something that I actually have a problem with. Not from like a, mostly with myself, and anything that I do is not good enough. And not in like in a perfectionist way, but anything as I'm kind of going through the world, oh, that could be better, that could be better. I don't really stop and celebrate things. And so what I've started doing to get better at that and not live in that world is each day we'll text each other three things that we're grateful for. So I think I'm up to like 200 things now. But the point of being able to do that is to see if we're called to have that giving generosity, being a generous people that gives. It's hard to do that if you don't see that you actually have a ton of stuff and a ton of ways to do that. And so one of the things I'd like you guys to try is each day this week, write down three things. Just I do it at the beginning of my day, but I realize for some people in their daily routine at the end of the day or in the middle of the day might be better. But just start identifying in your life the things that you're grateful for and start seeing that you actually come from a place of wealth and that you have opportunities to have a giving posture and not have to worry about, do I have enough? And the second thing that, and these are backwards, that's the second thing in your bulletin, but I'm going to talk about this second. The first thing in your bulletin, I want you guys to pick one of these four promises and recite it each day this week. One of the things with this Psalm 37 is that, and actually it says Psalm 51 up there, so that's kind of funny. It's Psalm 37. The reason that this is here is because it was something that was recited truth to God. It's truth that he gives us that's recited back to him, acknowledging honestly that we don't have the answers and that these are truths we want to see in our world or in our lives. And so this first action step, I want you guys to pick the truth that you see on there that most resonates with where you're at and where you're trying to be successful, and just recite that each day. And maybe memorize it, and maybe you do it longer than a week, but take one of these four things, or you could even do all of them, but just speak it back to God, even though he's spoken it to you and he's telling you, recite it back to him, acknowledging honestly that this is what you want, almost as like a reminder to him, hey, this is what you've promised me, like this is something that you are giving me and that I want. And through doing that, you'll kind of be able to identify better in your life how God is moving and how he has blessed you, and acknowledging those things out loud to him help us grow in our relationship with him and help us grow in our honesty with him for the things that he wants for us that we're almost asking or demanding back of him that he's already trying to give you. So I want to pray for you guys that way today. If you guys want to stand, we're actually going to continue to worship. We'll stand and pray together and continue to worship. God, we thank you that you give us promises, and that you have promised us things, that you have a future for us, that you've postured us such that we don't have to play by the rules of society and the rules of Google and the rules that are ever-changing here. And we ask that this morning, the people who are in anxiety, who are in constant wondering, constant comparison, constant concern about their future and about what success is in this world, we ask that they would encounter your peace and that they would encounter your spirit, God, who promises us things and who tells us, this is what I want for you, and who has a plan for us. And we ask that this morning we would be responsive to where you want us to move and where you want us to go. And we ask that as we continue to go through these sermons, God, that you would help us to become more honest with you and learn the skills in order to do that, what you call us to, an honest, open relationship, God, as you continue to move us closer and closer towards you, and as you position us in society such that others see what you're doing in our lives and desire that so that their lives can encounter you as well. And to see, Jesus, you change lives, not only for us, but for them. And we pray these things, Jesus, in your name. Amen.